Shavua Tov. By now I can say good afternoon, and it's wonderful not only to see everyone, but have this very special zchut of learning together with you and basically discussing a major challenge that we face today, certainly as parents who are all mechanchim, grandparents, and even as perhaps we look around at society, one of the greatest challenges that we're going to see are children. And as mentioned by many of the other speakers before, this new age that our children are facing with much greater challenges, certainly with regard to religious education. And we're going to discuss this morning as POMO and FOMO. And even though that may sound rather funny, and I'll be honest, I wasn't sure what these acronyms really meant until, especially the FOMO, I had a student come to me a few years ago, and she came into my office saying, "Shani, I'm experiencing terrible FOMO." And I thought, in Eretz Yisrael, this must be some type of parasite that she has. She had this grimace on her face, and she says, "Yes, and it's particularly bad on Thursday nights." And I'm thinking, what do we serve in Midrashan Thursday nights that somehow is going to be canalizing this terrible syndrome? And as she sees that, I have this look on my face, and she says, "Yes, especially when I'm in the Beit Midrash, I have terrible FOMO because I want to be with my friends who are eating out in town. And when I'm in town, then I have terrible FOMO. I want to be in the Beit Midrash. And I'm trying to figure out what type of parasite is so geographically sensitive." And then she finally tells me, "You know what FOMO is?" And I finally admitted, "No, I do not." She says, "FOMO is the fear of missing out. The fear of missing out on some type of activity, whether one is in the Beit Midrash, and one is afraid one is missing out on that social construct and that social timeout, or whether one is enjoying with one's friends and feels some type of FOMO, missing out on another opportunity." But what we're going to explore together this afternoon is how these two ideas, really of FOMO and POMO, or the postmodern age, are actually linked one to the other. So let's begin with a definition of POMO, of postmodernism. Postmodernism, as you see, is a broad movement that developed in the mid to late 20th century across philosophy, the arts, architecture, and criticism. And I'd like to add here, again, religion as well. And that marked a departure from modernism. The term has also more generally been applied to the historical era following modernity and the tendencies of this era, namely ours. While encompassing a wide variety of approaches, postmodernism is generally defined by an attitude of skepticism, irony, or rejection toward the meta-narratives and ideologies of modernism. So already as one reads this, then one should be wary and perhaps even somewhat reserved with regard to what our children are exposed to today, challenging ideologies, challenging certain structures, certain edicts perhaps, again, certain basic ideologies, often calling into question various assumptions of Enlightenment rationality, calling into question then principles of faith. Consequently, common targets of postmodern critique include universalistic notions of objective reality, morality, truth, human nature, reason, language, and social progress. All of a sudden, our children are taking a step back and they're questioning certain truths that not only did we never question, but we were taught these truths. We internalized these truths. We live by them. And today, our children are being taught that it's a positive avenue to challenge these basic truths. Beyond that, postmodern thinkers frequently call attention to the contingent or socially conditioned nature of knowledge claims and value systems, situating them as products of particular political, historical, or cultural discourses and hierarchies. Accordingly, postmodern thought is broadly characterized by tendencies to self-referentiality, epistemological and moral relativism, pluralism, subjectivism, and irreverence. And as you're looking at these words, one should think that as a frum, as a religious, sensitive Jew, these are exactly the values that we don't necessarily want to propound in our students. Those of irreverence. We had a whole shiur this morning on yirah that must be balanced with ahava, on Torat Imecha and Musar Avicha. And now our children are facing a generation wherein they're taught that there isn't really any Musar Avicha. It's all about Torat Imecha. And even the Torot of our mothers must and should be challenged. And everything is, in fact, relative. And I used to give shiurim on the topic of truth and tolerance and pluralism and the struggle between religious autonomy and religious authority and personal autonomy. But that term, even, a religious authority, doesn't exist in the vocabulary of our children today. Today, it's just about personal autonomy and defining relativism, subjective belief systems, espousing pluralism to an extreme. Not necessarily just being tolerant of others' truths, but accepting that there must be multiple truths in every area. Postmodern critical approaches gained purchase in the 1980s and 1990s and have been adopted in a variety of academic and theoretical disciplines, including cultural studies, philosophy of science, economics, linguistics, architecture, feminist theory, literary criticism, as well as art movements in fields such as literature and music. Postmodernism is often associated with schools of thought such as deconstruction and post-structuralism, as well as philosophers such as Lyotard and Derrida and Jameson, though many so-labeled thinkers have criticized the term. And as we approach then this question of how do we educate religiously, how do we teach Torah then in a postmodern age where Torah Judaism is really just one of many truths? And we know that our children are not only encouraged to challenge, but are going to be exposed, whether we like it or not, to so many other possibilities, keeping in mind that there isn't really an option with social media for them not to be exposed to these values of postmodernism. And this is why we also see this associated with FOMO, with the fear of missing out. Because if every activity, if every science, if every study has truth to it, then how am I going to choose what to do? And if I'm engaged in one class, in one shiur, then I have FOMO. I really want to be in this alternate class. And even if I'm learning Gemara here, maybe I should really be learning Tanakh. And if I'm learning Tanakh, maybe I should really be learning science. And if I'm learning science, maybe I should really be exploring some of the cultural milieu that's beyond me. And that's why this fear of missing out, this worried feeling that you may miss exciting events that other people are going to, especially caused by things you see in social media, is certainly going to be linked to this era of postmodernism. So how do we educate? Or let's first explore some of the risks that we already alluded to, recognizing that our children really are facing challenges that we not only did not necessarily have to deal with, but we were unexposed to. One we find expressed already in the 1840s in de Tocqueville's Democracy of America, he discusses the tyranny of the majority. What happens now in a world wherein everyone is connected, there is global communication, and as Jewish students, our children know that they are not part of a majority. They are the minority of a minority. And with the breakdown not only of a ghetto life, but with the breakdown of a strong community infrastructure, of family values that can be inculcated within the walls of one's home, we no longer have that anymore. And people have a fear now, that FOMO. I'm missing out. I'm missing out on not only the postmodern milieu, I'm missing out on everything that Judaism doesn't have to offer. And I am the minority. And as we know, the social, not merely peer pressure, but the social pressure in general is to feel that you are part of a greater whole. Or how about the next risk? The Jewish world is financially or socially or culturally treated as a secondary world. Not only post-Holocaust, but even today, whether it's BDS, whether it's all the anti-Semitism, do I really want to associate as a secondary peoples? When I know that there are multiple truths that are out there, but perhaps the greatest is the danger of bifurcation. The danger of bifurcation that Ronald Goldman, although he sounds Jewish, not actually Jewish, an English educator, he did a series of studies of two worlds, of the world basically, of the English Christian religious education, and he found that and through a story of a student whose biology teacher happened to be a volunteer teaching in the church where he was a member, one Sunday morning in Sunday school, the teacher taught the student the book of Jonah, the story of Jonah and the whale. About a month later, in a biology class while talking about whales, the student was exposed to the same teacher, who said in passing that no human being could survive being swallowed by a whale. After class, the student asked the teacher why he taught the story of Jonah in Sunday school so well that the student really believed it, but debunked the same story in the biology class. The teacher responded that in a church, a whale can swallow a human and then spit him out alive, but not in university. Therein lies the danger of this bifurcated world of Goldman's research. The criteria of fact and truth were so different in the world of religious education and of the university as to give rise to a dangerous side effect. And this is exactly what we find then our students, our children, are being challenged by as well. The messages that they're given in yeshiva, in midrasha, and then different messages that they hear about, whether it's in university or through, as we said, social media. So after addressing all of these risks, let's try to look on the bright side for a moment and see not only opportunities that perhaps as educators, as parents, we should take advantage of, but within Judaism in particular, how we're meant to address these challenges. The first, as we see, is to create one integrated overall framework for the two worlds. What we really want to try to do is to create within our homes and in our communities not a bifurcated world, but one wherein we teach our children that Judaism is not only one of many truths, but Judaism contains the greatest of the truths. That Judaism and Torah strives to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through the word of Hashem, through the Torah, we have an advantage. Chaviv in Yisrael, we are special. And this is a message that we do have to transmit to our children. That through Torah, they will learn other truths. They will learn universal values. And we find this especially when we open up Chamisha Chumshei Torah. We open up Sefer Dvarim. We hear of a microcosm of perfection that the Torah calls HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that Hashem will select, the Beit HaMikdash, exposing our children to a place that was meant to be Beiti Beit Tfilah Yikarei L'chol HaAmim, how Judaism embraces other ideas and values and is meant to edify us as people, as religious personae, as mention, to go out into the world and to affect others as well, not only as an Or LaGoyim, but to teach people what Torah values, values of monotheism, values of ethics, basic principles of faith are all about. That is one value that we want to ensure to inculcate in our children. And what the Beit HaMikdash may accomplish in the realm of Kedushat HaMakom, Shabbat certainly serves in the realm of Kedushat HaZman, teaching our children how Shabbos is a value as well, how Shabbos is a truth. There are many people I see and I meet, various students on birthright tours, who don't even know what Parshat HaShavua for Shabbat is. And when you teach them the value of Shabbat, of turning and disengaging from their cell phones, from media for 24 plus hours, that value resonates with them. Teaching them what a time period within the family, what values of the family unit have to contribute to the edification of people, both as individuals and certainly as a community and as a society. This is how we want to educate our children. But I think that the greater challenge, the challenge of bifurcation, may perhaps be addressed by what Rav Soloveitchik calls the covenantal community, understanding that we are part of a covenant. And this is actually postmodern terminology as well, understanding in a world of multiple truths that different religions can have truths. And what we want to instill in our children is that our truth really is a wonderful truth, is what we believe is the greatest of the truths, because this is based in Amito Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the truth of Hashem. But what is this truth of Yahadut? It's a brit, which means a two-sided, symbiotic relationship a breed that we find expressed, for example, in Tehillim Chaf Dalid, Mi Aleh Bahar Hashem, you want a relationship with Hashem? Well, you want to know what's special about Judaism? HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there, waiting for a relationship, but you have to do something as well. You have to go, if you want to get up and have this relationship, then work on yourself. Niki chapayim v'var levav, asher lo nasa l'shav nashi v'lo nishba l'mirma, yisab racha me'it Hashem. You have to work on your own thoughts, on your speech, on your actions, and then you may merit this relationship with Hashem. We have to educate with dignity and mutual responsibilities. A word that rarely appears in the lexicon of children today. Responsibility. There's no responsibility in a postmodern world where everything goes, where there isn't really anything that is demanded of me because there are multiple truths and multiple values. And we know that responsibility may not always be so much fun. We know that responsibility may counter this FOMO sensibility that our students have, and yet this is how we educate. We educate based on a covenantal community. And therefore, what I'd really like to address today is to show how these values stem from the Torah itself. How if we look at the stories of the Torah, we know that perhaps even FOMO is not so modern or postmodern after all. The sense of understanding that there can be multiple ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but the Torah tells us how this is done. And certainly FOMO, the fear of missing out, we're going to see how the Torah addresses this. And the first time where we find FOMO is in a story that we read not too long ago, if you recall, in a Parshat Bahalotzcha, FOMO story number one, the story of Karban Pesach. Vayhi biyom kolot Moshe lakim et ha-mishkan, vayimshach oto vayikadesh oto ve'et kol keilah ve'et ha-mizbeach ve'et kol keilah vayimshachem vayikadesh otam. On the day that Moshe Rabbeinu completed the construction of the Mishkan, and we hear from the end of Sefer Shmot, and also from Vayikra, Perek Chet, and again in Bamidbar, that this is Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And what happens on Rosh Chodesh Nisan? Well, from the end of Sefer Shmot, we heard about how Moshe is going to be busy inaugurating the Mishkan. From Sefer Vayikra, we hear about how the Kohanim are going to be involved in the Mishkan. And now in Bamidbar, we hear that also representatives of Am Yisrael, Nisiei Yisrael are there, Roshei Beit Avotam, Heim Nisiei HaMatot, Heim HaUmdim Al HaPkudim. This is part of the beauty of a covenantal community. In Judaism, everyone is represented. Moshe is there inaugurating the Mishkan for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Kohanim are going to be trained as the maintenance crew for the Mishkan. And Am Yisrael are represented through their respective tribal leaders, each one bringing not only a karban, but as we know from the continuation, firstly here in Parshat Naso, each one is giving the exact same karban. And Chazal note that the Torah repeats the exact same karban by each Nasi to teach us that each one is important. Chazal learned from here, each Nasi that brought a mizrak, that brought the utensil, that collected the yayin and the blood. Chazal teach us in Bamidbar Rabbah, the mizrak of yayin that the Nasi brought, yayin in Gematria 70, represents Shivim Panim LaTorah. Each one of the Nisiyim represented a different truth of the Torah, a different perspective, literally a different pan, a face or a facet of the Torah. Because there is room to understand different opinions, as long as they are all the opinions that stem from the Torah itself. Pasuk Yud, Vayakrivu ha-Nisiyim et Chanukat ha-Mizbeach b'yom himashach oto, Vayakrivu ha-Nisiyim et Karbanam lifnei ha-Mizbeach. And on the same day that the Nisiyim representing Am Yisrael are going to bring their respective karbanot, we find in Perek Chet, Vayizaber Hashem Moshe Limor, Daber al Aaron, Vamarte Elav, Ba'alotchat Haneirot al Mul Pnei HaMenorah. Aaron, you are going to have the specific task of lighting the menorah. And what we find from this scene is a message that we have to teach our students in this postmodern era where apparently everything goes and there isn't necessarily any identity, no gender identity, in fact, or no particular role that people play. And I can shift from my role today to tomorrow in Judaism as part of this covenantal community. We explain that there are different roles that people play, different roles of the mothers, of the fathers, of the Nasiim, of the Kohanim, of the Levim that we're going to see as well. And part of the beauty of this community of a Brit is that we work together. And part of what postmodernism provides for is the undermining of a social framework, because each one, each individual, can espouse their own belief and their own value system. And the Torah says, but ideally you're going to work together. And even the Levim, who you may claim are part of this caste system, we're going to note that the Torah tells us the Levim are part of this community as well. The motif, the repetitive term that appears throughout this parak, Kachat HaLevim mitoch b'nei Yisrael. The Levim are part of you. Take these Levim, me'et b'nei Yisrael. Ve'hevdaltat HaLevim mitoch b'nei Yisrael. They may be from you. They may be separated, but they are still of you. Mitoch b'nei Yisrael. Nitunim he'malim mitoch b'nei Yisrael. And they will have a particular role to play within the Mishkan. But now let's turn to Bamidbar Perek Ted on page 3. Vayedaber Hashem Moshe b'midbar Sinai. After we find the representation of the Nasiim by the Mishkan, after we find the separation, the relegation, not only of specific tasks that will be offered to the Kohanim and subsequently to the Levim, now the Torah tells us, on that same date, on the same date where we hear that everyone is represented, on the day that Hashem is going to manifest himself to all of Am Yisrael and the Mishkan, Bashana Hashemit L'Teitam Me'eret Mitzrayim B'Chodesh HaRishon Le'mor, reminding you that it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the anniversary of the date when we became this covenantal community. 1 year to when HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu L'Chodshei Hashana. Hashem comes back to Moshe and says, on the same anniversary wherein I told you, Seh Levet Avot Seh Levayit, you're going to go and become a people based on taking a Seh. You're going to count now based on the lunar calendar. And 10 days from now, you will begin to watch over a goat, a lamb, and 4 days thereafter, you will slaughter that. And then you are going to reenact Brit Bein HaBtarim, the covenant of Avraham Avinu. Well, now it's a year later. And even though you initially heard from Moshe Rabbeinu in Perek Yud Gimel of Sefer Shemot, that from the time that you leave Mitzrayim, Pesach is not going to be just a historical holiday that stands alone, but is going to automatically be linked to a 7-day matzah eating festival, Chag HaMatzot, that will be celebrated once you come into Eretz Yisrael. And albeit Am Yisrael thought that a year later they would already be living in the land, Hashem says, you're not there yet. And therefore this year, you're once again going to sacrifice the Karban Pesach Ba'arba'asar Yom B'Chodesh Hazeh Ben Harbayim Tasu Oto B'Moado. Make sure that on the first anniversary, you internalize the message of Karban Pesach. You understand what Jewish identity is all about. Here we find that even though they can't celebrate it in the ideal manner, they're not yet in Eretz Yisrael, it cannot be linked to the 7-day Chag HaMatzot, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, but this is your identity. And this is how we have to instill within our children, whether it's through Shabbos, whether it's through the collective mitzvot, whether it's through the values, and at times universal values that we share with others, or whether it's through sitting around on the night of the Seder, teaching them the importance of our collective memory and identity. Hashem says, you're going to perform the Pesach ceremony this year as well. But then a very interesting narrative, Pasuk Vav, Vayhi anashim asher hayu tmiyim lenefesh adam. But there were some people who couldn't be part of this community because they were tmiyim lenefesh. They were impure. And if you're impure, then you cannot participate in the eating of the Paschal ceremony, in the eating of the Karban Pesach, lo yachlu lasot ha-Pesach v'yomahu. Mayakrivu lifnei Moshe v'lifnei Aaron v'yomahu. And instead of just being content, saying, okay, we won't participate in Karban Pesach, we have a heter, we have an allowance. Ha'usik b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. We're in a state of tumah. We can eat the Karban Pesach. Here we're going to find the first FOMO. And the Torah says, you know, FOMO isn't so bad as long as it's properly directed. What are we teaching our children? What are they so afraid of missing out on? They're afraid that they're going to miss out on the latest trends, on the latest song, on the latest movie, on the latest WhatsApp message, on the latest group that just came out. The Torah says, notice what really should define us. What are they afraid of? They turn to Moshe and Aaron. Vayomru hanashim hayim ha'elav, anachnu tmeyim lenefesh adam. Lama nigara. What do these words literally mean? Why should we miss out? It literally means FOMO. We have this fear, a fear of missing out, a fear of missing out on the ceremony, and not just on any ceremony. They're not complaining that they can't participate in bringing karbanot at this time. They're upset that they can't bring the Karban Pesach. And is it that they're upset that they can't participate in the delicious lamb chop dinner? Well, let's look. Lama nigara levilti hakrivet karban Hashem b'moado. Had the pasuk stopped right there, then I would have thought that they are upset, that they're missing out on eating and bringing the Karban Pesach at its time. But look carefully at the last clause of the pasuk. B'toch b'nei Yisrael. They teach us what the antidote to POMO is. And the antidote to postmodernism is strengthening what Jewish identity is all about. And strengthening Jewish identity through what we should have a fear of missing out on. What are they afraid of missing out on? Not the technical ceremony of Karban Pesach. They're afraid of missing out on the B'toch B'nei Yisrael. Here is the first time since last year, since last Rosh Chodesh Nisan, since last Yudalit Nisan, that we can all participate in a national event, in the national event that created Jewish identity, the event, the ceremony of Karban Pesach. So they turn to Moshe and Aaron and they say, how can we miss out on this? How can we lose this aspect of Jewish identity? And Moshe explains, that's an excellent point. Instead of just telling you that you're patur, that you're exempt, Moshe brings their argument before Hashem, and Hashem says, excellent. They understand what identity is. They understand true FOMO. This is what they should feel that they're missing out on. And therefore, I'm going to make sure that they don't miss out on this. Daber al bnei Yisrael lemor, ishish ki yet hamei lanefesh obederech rechoka lachem o ledorotechem masa pesach lahashem. Not just for now, but for years from now, for hundreds and thousands of years from now, remember that this is your true identity. This is what you should not be missing out on. B'chodesh hashini b'arbasar yom bein arbayim yasu oto amatot umorim yochlu. Tell them that exactly a month from now, on the anniversary wherein they received the man, in a very similar fashion to the way that they received Karban Pesach, just like the man coming a month later, on Tet Zayin Nisan, they weren't allowed to leave their homes just like by Karban Pesach. They had to have a pre-calculated amount of man, just like Isha Lemechsat Nefashot. They had to pre-calculate how many people would consume the Karban Pesach, just like they couldn't leave anything left over until the next morning, like the Karban Pesach and the man. Hashem says, a month later, you're going to properly identify B'toch B'nei Yisrael. So we wonder, who were the somewhat anachronist postmodernists then? Who were the ones who felt, even though we're Tamei Lanefesh, we can't miss out on Karban Pesach? Chazal explained in Masechet Sukkah, who were these Tmei Lanefesh Adam? Mi hayu? Opinion number one, Rabbi Yosef HaGlili says, Nosei Arono Shel Yosef hayu. And this always bothered me. What does that mean? They were carrying the Aron of Yosef. But if they knew on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that on Yud Dalet Nisan, they had to be Tahor in order to consume the Karban Pesach, And if they were the ones accompanying the coffin, so to speak, of Yosef, then why not just leave it 7 days before? And this way you could be tahor. But obviously we see that they refused to leave their accompaniment of Atzmot Yosef. But at the same time, they don't want to miss out on Karban Pesach. They truly have FOMO. We don't want to forfeit the schut of being those that are going to watch over the kever, the atzmot of Yosef, but we also are going to complain that we are not going to participate betoch b'nei Yisrael. And if one understands what the bones of Yosef symbolize in Tanakh, then you appreciate how, of course, says Rav Yosef HaGlili, these are the same people who can forfeit Karban Pesach. Because the atzmot of Yosef over and over again throughout Tanakh represent the promise of Yitzhak Mitzrayim, represent Pakod Yivkod Alokim Etchem Valita Matat Motai Mize Etchem. And therefore, when Am Yisrael are already on their way out of Mitzrayim, that's when the Torah says, oh, by the way, they took the atzmot of Yosef with them. The atzmot of Yosef that represented the national identity through Geulat Mitzrayim. So here we have people who are struggling and straddling with their own identity. On one hand, Geulat Mitzrayim is symbolized through the Atzmot of Yosef. We don't want to forfeit that. On the other hand, being part of this national identity that began with Geulat Mitzrayim, that began with Yitziah from Egypt, that we also don't want to forfeit. So Moshe, how are we going to be able to do both? We have terrible FOMO. And Moshe says, but this is the most beautiful FOMO. This is the fear of missing out on the identity of Am Yisrael, a national identity, on teaching our children. However, they do not appreciate what it means to be part of Am Yisrael, then they're missing out. If they don't understand the value of a Seder, they're missing out. If they don't understand the mitzvot that make us so unique, then they're missing out. And that should appeal to this generation. But opinion number two, maybe they weren't those that were accompanying Atzmot of Yosef. Rabbi Akiva says, these were Mishal Vel Tzafan Hayum, Shahayu Oskin Benada Vavihu. Looking at Vayikra Perek Tet, we know that Vayhi Bayom Hashmini, according to Ibn Ezra, according to the Ramban, on the eighth day of the Miluim that began on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, so on Chet Nisan, when everyone was waiting for the manifestation of Hashem, Vayera Lechem Kvod Hashem, to take place. And unfortunately, we know that at the same time that Moshe and Aaron are going to go to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the fire, Nadav and Avihu take their Eish Zarah, Asher Lo Tziva Otam Hashem, and they're consumed by fire. And Moshe and Aaron's cousins, Mishal and Eltzafan, are enjoined to remove the corpses from the Mishkan. Rabbi Akiva says, they're the ones who came to Moshe and said, we have FOMO. On one hand, we're Levim, which is wonderful. On the other hand, we're Tamei, and we can't necessarily participate in the Karban Pesach right now. And I believe that this is so beautiful and tragic at the same time, because if that occurred on Chet Nisan, then follow together with me, that means that they were Tamei, on Chet, on Tet, on Yud, Yud Aleph, Yud Bet, Yud Gimel, Yud Dalet. They missed the process of Tahara by just a few hours. Otherwise, they could have participated with the Karban Pesach. And why is Rabbi Akiva so convinced that it's Mishal and Eltzafan? Not only because they were indeed Tamei, if they remove the corpses of Nadav and Avihu, but because they are Levim. And how are the Levim identified in the same Perek? Mitoch b'nei Yisrael, mitoch b'nei Yisrael. They are representatives of Am Yisrael. In a postmodern world, no, there's no caste system and no special role. The Torah says, but we do have special roles. And the Levim are representative of Am Yisrael in the Mishkan. And therefore, it's Mishal and Eltzafan who says, we understand what FOMO is. They're the ones who come to Moshe and Aaron and say, we have terrible fear of missing out because we're the ones who are supposed to represent B'nai Yisrael, Mitoch B'nai Yisrael, and this Karban is Bitoch B'nai Yisrael. How could it be that if we're the representatives of Am Yisrael, that we are not going to participate in this national Karban that we are so much a part of. To which Moshe says, that's an excellent point. We do have to teach our children what it means to be part of a people, to participate, albeit at times with different roles, but to recognize again the national identity and the roles that we each serve in a symbiotic manner. And the last explanation may be oskin b'metz mitzvah. Maybe these were people who understood, even though ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. There were people who had no one else to bury them. And therefore, there were others who sacrificed their own national identity to be part of another truth, to participate in another mitzvah, to participate in the mitzvah of kvurat hamit, a great respect for the dead. And therefore, they turn to Moshe and they say, Lama nigara? How could it be? If the point of mitzvot is to bring us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then how can we miss out, once again, on the national identity that brings us closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? This is antidote number one, the FOMO of teaching what national identity, the value of B'toch B'nei Yisrael, represented through the Karban Pesach, is all about. But that's FOMO number one. The Torah says that's not the only antidote. Antidote number two is going to be the second time that we're going to hear the exact same terminology, the exact same terminology of we're missing out. And that's the story, as you see on page 4, of Benot Zlovchad. Vatekravna Benot Zlovchad ben Chefer ben Gilad ben Machir ben Menashe. Five different generations of sons are coming, and they are from the family of Menashe. Ve'ele shmot benotav. And the banot are going to have a voice just like the ben. Five banim and five banot. Machla noah chagla milka tirza. Stand before Moshe and Elazar HaKohen, and before the Nisim, and before the Ida. And they explain, Avinu met b'midbar, v'hu lo haya b'toch ha'idah nu'adim al Hashem b'adat Korach. Her father died in the midbar. Ki b'chato met uvanim lo hayu lo. Lama yigara. We also have a fear of missing out. And you know what? This isn't even just our fear. Why should not we miss out? Lama nigara, but lama yigara. Why should he miss out? Why should our father miss out? And look carefully, it's not even just our father. Lama yigara, shame avinu mitoch mishpachto. Here we find a different missing out. Why should our father's name, why should our father's legacy miss out? Why should our father not have a means of perpetuating the legacy of his family? And what is their claim? What is the most efficient and Torah-oriented manner to perpetuate a legacy of a family, to perpetuate one's name? That's going to be through Nachala in Eretz Yisrael. They explain, we're not willing to forfeit this, not for our sakes. It's not about us. The Torah is teaching us, how do we educate in a postmodern world? You teach your children that it's not about you challenging the past, it's about you continuing the past, perpetuating the past, making sure that the name of your father and the legacy of the family continues, making sure that the history of the parents is going to be passed on to the next generation. And the Torah says, and you want to know the best way to do that? It's not only through having children, it's through making sure that you relate to the Nachala of Eretz Yisrael. Part of the identity that we have to instill in our children today is not only national identity, but what FOMO should they be feeling? The fear of missing out on a connection with Eretz Yisrael, because that is going to be the means through which forever we will have a continuous name. That is how we will make sure that the land of Eretz Yisrael carries the name of who we are, carries our history, our past, and our present, and our future. And therefore, it is imperative, no matter where we live, to instill the FOMO of Eretz Yisrael, of Medinat Yisrael. And as we're reaching the end of the shiur anyway, then just recognize that there's one more antidote one more means of establishing an identity in this postmodern world of assuring a collective community within Am Yisrael, not only instilling the values of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, but one more time that the Torah tells us, this is the correct FOMO. This is what no one should miss out on. Devarim Perek Yud Gimel, Moshe tells them, "Et kol ha-davar asher anochi mitzave etchem oto tishmeru la'asot." These are the words of the Torah. Lo tosif alav, ve'lo tigra mimenu. Don't add to the words of the Torah, but also do not detract from the words of the Torah. Do not rationalize and justify and tell yourselves in every generation that this isn't relevant anymore, because this is part of your identity as well. Do not miss out. Do not miss out on a single mitzvah. Do not miss out on a single value represented through the Torah. These are the three FOMOs that stand as our only chance to inculcate the proper values of our children, to counter the pressures of a world that attempts to undermine them. The values of Am Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael and Torat Yisrael. Let us try then to ensure that we instill this within our children, that we express to them this fear of missing out on the greatest pillars of what truly identify us, and assure us that in every generation, regardless of whatever the zeitgeist may be, we're going to be able to maintain and secure a proper future for Am Yisrael, because we know what truly identifies us.